when I retire. Don't wanna have to worry when I retire. I don't wanna have to fret. It's my desire, but I can't be in a hurry, 'cause I don't think I can retire quite yet.
This is another edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be in to explain how to calculate how much retirement savings we will need and how much we can spend in our golden years. This is As Promised Because You Are Awesome. We reached our On Your Money goals in our recent pledge drive. Plus, Kevin has some tips on using debit cards to help your credit rating and, in the spirit of Halloween, some frightening financial advice and answers to any questions you might have about personal finance issues that are spooking you these days. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC. And he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
Welcome back. Are you all rested up from the pledge drive?
I am. It took me a long time, but I had to go to each and every individual who pledged and to make sure they got their money. I just knocked on the door and wanted to get it all done before we started this show, so I had to do it round the clock. So for those of you who I woke up in the middle of the night asking for your $15, I'm sorry for it. Maybe you'll think twice about pledging next time.
Anyway, we did promise that we would reveal this calculation on how much we can spend in retirement as our thank you for reaching our goal during the On Your Money Pledge Drive show. But we ended the show not knowing if we made the goal or not.
A cliffhanger.
I know. So now I'm finally revealing for the first time that we made it.
We made it. Who did shoot JR?
Yeah,
after
right.
All?
Actually, it looks like, and Bill Martin's added this up for me, I guess 423 people pledged
wow.
during our On Your Money broadcast during the fall membership drive. So thank you so very much. And a little bit later in the program, we will have the promised special segment on spending in retirement. And so I'm looking forward to that. And we will also have your answers to your questions about personal finance issues. But I know that we wanted to start a little bit with what's going on with Amazon.com. If you plan on doing some holiday shopping online, it's going to probably cost us a little bit more money, Kevin.
That's right. If you do shop on Amazon.com, which I do and a lot of other people do, and especially if you are from Wisconsin, all shoppers will be subject to a new higher threshold for free shipping. Previously, and I think it had been going on for about 10 years, Amazon had a deal where if you bought certain goods that totaled more than $25, you could get free two-day shipping. And that threshold has been raised to $35. So if you're not an Amazon Prime member, you might consider getting it. But if not, expect to have to spend a little more to get those goods to you a little quicker. But starting November 1st, Amazon is going to begin collecting sales taxes on purchases made by Wisconsin residents.
So why is this starting on November 1st?
It's because Amazon is constructing a distribution center in Kenosha, and therefore Wisconsin is the 14th state in the nation in which Amazon has a physical presence. And therefore, by nature of the law, Amazon is required to collect sales taxes of 5% on purchases made by residents in which the store has a physical presence. Now, technically, Wisconsin residents are already supposed to calculate the sales taxes that they owe for online purchases and submit them to the state of Wisconsin Department of Revenue on a form along with their income taxes. But I haven't met anyone who ever does that. I've never met anyone who's ever been called on that. And so it's kind of gone by the wayside. And this should be an interesting change for those who do shop online.
Yeah, yeah. I know I shop online Land's End, and Land's End, because it has a physical presence in the state, will also collect. Well, this doesn't sound like great news for Amazon's customers in Wisconsin. What do you think?
Probably not. You pay a little bit more, but it could be good for the state. First of all, there are those jobs, purported to be 1,100 jobs at the distribution center in Kenosha. And then there's the tax revenue. The Wisconsin Department of Revenue says that it should raise an additional $30 million annually in tax revenue for the state. Now, keep in mind, that's a drop in the bucket. It's less than 1% of the total sales taxes that the state collects. But also philosophically, it helps level the playing field with physical sellers and stores who are in the state already and who already do pay taxes, not only sales taxes, but probably property taxes on the buildings that they occupy, and also hire employees who have earnings and who pay income taxes on those earnings to the state, and also spend that money generally in the state as well. So I think overall it's a good thing.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. Time now for our On Your Money email bag. A listener named Matt says, recently I was shopping for a car and a salesman told me that I could use a prepaid credit card in order to help build my credit. Is this true? And if so, how exactly does this work?
A prepaid credit card doesn't do much, actually, to help a credit score. It's just like more like a traveler's check or a gift card. And the credit bureaus generally don't include the information on transactions made within a prepaid card. And what's worse about these things is many celebrities promote them, even some personal finance experts who shall not be named, but who say that they have a card that they get payment from, that they call it better than money. And this personal finance expert says it's better than using money, and it only costs $3 per month in fees.
So is there any other ways that Matt can boost his credit score?
Yes, he can get a secured card, and that is where he deposits money in a bank account that ties into a credit card. And it only serves as collateral against charges if Matt doesn't pay his payment on time. They'll deduct the card, but they don't actually draw down the card like a prepaid card does. Those transactions are reported to the credit bureaus, so it will provide some help for his credit score and then allow him to take the next step in building up his credit.
And what's the next step?
He can get an unsecured card, a traditional credit card, and he might want to start with a retail store that he might frequent, or maybe a higher interest one that is specifically designed for people who are trying to build their credit up rather than have a good score already. He will probably pay higher interest and fees on that type of card, but if he charges a few times and then pays it off on time, it'll build up his score enough where after 6 to 12 months or so, he should see a decent rise in his score, and then he can get a card that everybody else can apply for.
If you have a question for Kevin McKinley, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. To the phones we go, and Marty in Douglas County is with us. Hello, Marty. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Kevin. My favorite show. I never miss it.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Yes, yes, I know to butter you up, so I'd like to start out with that. Last time you were on, Kevin, you said don't have all your money in one financial institution, that to have all of your eggs in one financial nest was probably not a good idea. So we were getting ready to buy a CD at a bank, and I called all the banks in the area. I did this last year. Actually, called all of the banks in my area, and the credit union where I have most of my cash had rates, interest rates for CDs 2 to 3 times higher than any other bank around here. So I am going to put all my money in one bank, and I want to know why I shouldn't do that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your kind words, Marty. All this talk of butter and eggs starting to get me a little hungry, but it's not that I don't recommend it or recommend against it. It's just that you have to be careful in this day and age, in part because banks and credit unions are subject to pressures right now because they don't make as much money on our money as they once did because interest rates are so low. They have a difficult time turning our deposits around and either lending it out or buying securities or something so that they can make enough money to pay their cost of regulation, staying in business, employees, service, et cetera, and then still pay out a decent rate. And because it's very difficult to know what's going on within a bank or credit union at any given time, a few hard lefts in the economy can sometimes cause some big problems in individual institutions. And it can be generally, but especially in some smaller institutions. Now, I believe in credit unions. I like them. I like small community banks as well. But it's just a little bit safer, kind of a belt and suspenders approach, if you will, to have your money in a couple different institutions. And you bring up a good point, Marty. The only time that I would say that you could probably go against that is if you can find some spectacular deal that you normally can't find in another institution. Many of the products are so close and so low in terms of what they offer in yields and charge in fees that they're almost commodities. It's like buying, you know, sugar. But if you can find a good deal and you trust the institution, you're happy with the service and you know the fees, then definitely I'm okay with leaving more money in one institution than you otherwise would. One thing I would caution you on, though, if you are buying CDs, and I'm a big fan of CDs right now, if you are buying CDs, make sure you're aware of the terms for early withdrawal. Usually that substantial penalty, sometimes on those higher rate CDs, can be very high and it can actually wipe out all of the interest that you might earn.
Yeah, we've been doing CDs for years because we're afraid to invest in pretty much everything else. So all this talk of sugar, eggs, butter, suspenders, pants, no.
Go make some brownies.
Thank you for the advice.
Thank you very much, Marty. And if you have any financial fears, we'll be welcoming those questions too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, and this is On Your Money here on the Ideas Network.
A little spending money, money to burn, money that you did not necessarily earn. Rainy days seem to wind up sunny. Long as you got a little spending money.
We are talking about your money during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. Welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our next caller is Lisa in Grafton. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was calling to get a suggestion for what further accounts I should be investing in for retirement. I currently have an IRA that I just started last year with about $5,000 in it. And then I just got a new job, so I'm now starting to withdraw money for a 401k on a monthly basis. And I'm wondering what further accounts I should be putting money into, whether it's a Roth IRA or, you know, more money into my 401k or to the IRA.
Are you able, Lisa, good for you, first of all, are you able to max out the contributions to the 401k, or is it just too much for you right now?
It is too much for me right now since I just recently graduated school.
Okay, great. Good for you. No apologies necessary. People would be actually better off maxing out their retirement accounts or saving as much as they can while they're in their 20s and 30s and then stopping their retirement contributions than doing what most of us do, which is do nothing in our 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and say, okay, I think maybe I'll start saving for retirement since I just qualified for AARP membership. So I applaud your philosophy, Lisa. What I would have you do is put in as much as you can to the 401k, and then anything that's left over, I would have you contribute to the Roth IRA instead. And the reason being is that the IRA gives you technically a tax break that you also get with a 401k. But the IRA money isn't quite as accessible as it would be if it were in a Roth IRA. And are you single, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm currently single, but I'll probably be getting married within a couple of years or so.
Okay, Anybody in mind, or just is that part of the life plan?
Yes, and he does know.
Okay, good. That's very good. I've found that in considering a partner, it's often good to check with the other person, see if they're as interested in getting married as you are. I if that's the case, what I would have you do is put as much as you possibly can into the 401k, and especially to the point where you can get down to the 15% federal income tax bracket. And that status is determined by the number that's on line 43 of your 1040. And for those of you who are temporarily single, it's in 2013, it's $36,250. And so if you can get your income from a tax standpoint down below that figure, then you can switch over to a Roth IRA. And the nice thing about a Roth IRA is you don't get a tax break on it, but you can pull the contributions back out whenever you want at any time with no penalty and no taxes whatsoever. And especially if you're thinking about, you know, you might be paying for a wedding, you might be buying a house, you might be moving or something like that, that Roth IRA is a neat way to save for retirement, but without putting the money aside for 40 more years.
Okay, Lisa?
Thank you.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you. Susan in Escanaba, Michigan is with us now. Hello, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're listening to us in Escanaba.
Yes. I have a question. I have earned a pension benefit. I'm 47 years old. I've earned a pension benefit that would start at age 65 of around $631 per month. But they're giving us an opportunity as of December of this year to receive a lump sum of around $43,000 a month versus starting a single life annuity of $193 a month. Now, I have an IRA that I rolled my 401k into, and my husband thinks I should get the single life annuity starting now. And so I'm just, because he wants to be a little bit more diversified, so we're debating as to what to do.
Ooh, it's going to be a marital spat that you can get in on.
Well, no, he'll
How does that make you feel, Susan?
But he's very strongly encouraging, or you know, he just wants us to be a little bit more diversified.
Sure, I get that. And by the way, thank you for your call, Susan. The fact that you are in Escanaba and listening proves that this is indeed a national show.
That's right.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
You bet. Okay, so are you in education by any chance, Susan?
No, I am a retired nurse. We started our own small business.
Hmm. Okay.
So my husband is still working full time.
Okay. And who's offering the pension to you? Is it from the state?
Well, it's from a hospital that I worked at.
Okay. Hmm. So this is run by the hospital. It's not a state or local municipality, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Normally, I would say to not take the money. Wait, and I'm sorry. Your choices are $43,000 in a lump sum now or at age 65.
Now.
Okay. And when is the $193 a month kick in?
That would be now. Also,
that'd be
or
now,
I can get $631 starting when I turn in age 65.
Okay. How's the small business going?
Okay. It opened a year ago, so it's good. We're not losing money, but we're not making a lot of money yet either.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of a bird in the hand kind of guy. And so my initial reaction, especially in light of a change like this, even though your husband is still working, is I would like to see you take the lump sum. Because as in my math, which could be incorrect, it's about, you're looking at about $2,400 a year, so you would need about 16 or 17 years of those $193 a month coming in to equal your $43,000. Does that sound about right?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what we figured.
Okay. So I think getting that money in your hands now, and especially since you're going to have a similar kind of income stream in retirement for both you and your husband, and that's going to be Social Security. That's money that's great to have, but you don't have any control over it. You don't have any real decisions to make other than when to take it and how. And so this is one more way to get that money in your hand when you can use it if an emergency should arise. And more importantly, you get to know where it is, you get to invest it how you want, you get to spend it how you want. So I am leaning strongly towards, leaning so strongly that I'm almost falling over, towards the lump sum, the $43,000. and just take that now. And if the world and the economy all go well enough to support a $631 pension when you're 65, well, you'll make so much more money on your business or your other retirement plans that you won't have to worry. But if things go wrong in any of those categories, you'll be very glad that you have that money now and can use it and invest it how you wish.
All right. Thanks, Susan, for the call. Let's go to Carol in Sturgeon Bay now. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Kevin. Boy, it's
Hello.
So nice to talk to Kevin. I always wait until your show to do my pledge for the fund drive.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Anyway, my question is, I have an elderly mother who's about, well, she'll be 91 on Thursday, and we are looking for some money that she had that is, seems to be missing over the last 7 years. And it was probably in, like, CDs and stuff like that. She didn't do a lot in stocks or anything like that. And I'm wondering who we could contact to help us look for this, because we don't seem to know how to do this. You know, she does not remember.
Yeah, and this is something I'm hearing a lot more about, and it's also going to be much more common going forward. And for those of you out there who are either have parents who are older or are an older person with children, let's use this as a time to think about talking with the person in your family. It doesn't have to be a family member. It could be another trusted person, and just saying, look, I'm going to write down everything that I have for you kids and give it to you just so you know where it is. Or, hey, Mom, Dad, you don't have to tell us where everything is, but could you tell us where that list is just in case you miss it or you can't you can't remember where it is? I mean, I'm 47 and a half, although I read at the level of a 49-year-old right now. It's still, you know, I can't remember where my car keys are right now. So I certainly understand someone who's 40 years older than me just having a hard time remembering all these confusing details. It's just one of the curses of age. So that's the first thing I would do. The second thing is, do you have any of her tax returns from those years in which the money might have gone missing?
I'm thinking we can find them.
Okay. Hopefully, at that point, she received a 1099 that can allow you kind of to...
My sister has her 1099.
Okay. That's the first place I would start. And then what state does she live in, if you don't mind me asking?
Wisconsin.
Oh, in Wisconsin. Okay, great. One of the duties of the state treasurer's office is to go around and try to find people who have unclaimed assets and property. And that's typically where this would go if there were money out there that had been forgotten. Maybe she moved, the banks, credit unions changed name, whatever. It generally goes to the state eventually if the institution can't find the original depositor. And you can go to unclaimed.org to get a listing of all kinds of different state agencies, but you can also go to the state treasurer's office as well, and they have a database you can use to search for names for it. And we'll put both of those links up at onyourmoney.com, Carol, so you can find them and then search for your mother's lost money.
Thank you, Carol. Yes, you just have to type in a name, and sometimes it magically comes up that you have some missing or unclaimed assets somewhere. So good luck to you, Carol, and happy birthday to your mom coming up. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC, here to offer you some information and advice on your money. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. We are in the Halloween spirit, so we figured it's a good time to address some scary financial issues and nightmares and face and fix some of our financial fears. Where do you want to begin, Kevin?
Well, these generally fall into two categories: of the ones that you can fix, and then the ones that you can't. But at least if you think about it that way, you say, "Well, there's some things I just don't have control over, and I can't address that. But there are some things I do, so I'm going to take some of those steps that will help me alleviate these fears and hopefully protect myself against it, not keep me awake at night." And ironically, some of them have similar steps across the board. So why don't you start, Joy? Name a fear that you think people out there probably have right about now.
I would say losing a job would be one fear.
Losing a job, that's a very good one. The University of Phoenix conducted a survey and said that 60% of full-time employed workers think about losing their job about once per week. And for about a third of the respondents, it was a constant thought on their minds. So the process to protecting yourself against that is, first of all, work hard. Don't do anything that you shouldn't be doing at work. But the second step is to know what you spend every single month. And the reason you do that is because then you know what you need to cover if you lose a paycheck. And you figure out what you might want to cut right now so that you can build up your savings and keep an excess set aside for that. Right now, the median length of unemployment, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is about 4 months, but the average is 9 months. So you should have between 4 to 9 months and hopefully 12 months worth of living expenses set aside so that if you do lose your job and your paycheck, you can still cover your basic monthly expenses out of that savings. Then if you're a homeowner, you may want to get a new mortgage now. And the reason I say to do that is because, first of all, if you have a lot of equity built up in that home, that's money that will be difficult to access if you don't have a job and you can't apply for a loan at that time. And second of all, you can park that money aside and use the savings from the refinancing to live off of if something should happen. Consider it kind of a safety net. If you can't bring yourself to get a new mortgage, at least get a home equity line of credit against the accumulated equity so that you can hopefully draw from that if you have to cover expenses in the event of a lost job. And then finally, have a fire drill. Say to yourself, all right, I just pulled into work and my key didn't fit in the door, or there was a note from my boss saying, see me in, it wasn't a good meeting, and I'm done. What would I do in that instance other than cry, or maybe for some people, celebrate? But then go through and say, how would I, you know, pay the mortgage or the rent or pay for groceries? What would I do? And that'll give you some motivation and some information on how you would cover that in the case it were to happen. Then if it does happen, the pain from the financial loss anyway isn't going to be quite as bad because you've already prepared for it.
Well, another fear that some of us might have is not having enough money to retire comfortably.
Yeah, that's a very common one. About two-thirds of Americans say that they do not have enough, and even the ones who do don't feel like they have enough. So we're going to talk about it a little later in the show, obviously. But what we'd like you to do now is, again, add up your spending, and we'll talk about how to use a multiple so that you can figure out if you're on track to retire. And again, cut what you can, and then increase your savings to your at-work retirement plan if you have one. That's one of the easiest ways to do it. And people say, gosh, that's really hard to do. Things are tight right now. Well, what if your boss came to you and said, hey, you're going to keep your job, but you're going to have a 10% reduction in salary. Let's say you're going from $50,000 a year down to $45,000 a year for easy math purposes. That wouldn't be good, but you'd probably figure out a way to survive. Well, take that cut now and do it in the form of increasing your at-work retirement plan contribution up to 10% of your salary. Most Americans contribute about 6 to 7%. 10% is a really great number because not only do you cut your taxes, but you save more for retirement, and hopefully you figure out how to spend less, which if you're lucky enough to listen in about 15 minutes, you'll find out that that's the key to retiring early and retiring forever.
Okay, sounds good. What about someone stealing our identity?
Ooh, I like that one. And therefore your money. First, you probably want to freeze your credit reports so that no one can use your Social Security number to open up a credit card account, borrow money in your name, and then not pay it back. You probably won't be on the hook for it, but it will be a hassle to undo, and it follows you around forever. I know some people who, this has happened 10 years ago, and they're still dealing with phone calls and collectors and trying to prove a negative that they didn't really borrow that money and not pay it back. So go to tinyurl.com/cfreeze, tinyurl.com/cfreeze, and we'll have that link up at onyourmoney.com. Second, don't let people get access to your computer and your information. Download good virus protection. One of the best free ones out there is at avg.com. Get a very good password protection plan. LastPass provides a really nice program that allows you to use just one password to have several very well-encrypted passwords for all your different private sites. And then then don't click on suspicious emails. If you get something from the IRS or your bank or your credit union or your investment firm, don't click on the link in the email. Go directly to the site and log in that way rather than following it through the hyperlink of the email. And then finally, use a good PIN number. Huffington Post recently ran a survey from Data Genetics who found that 11% of those four-digit PIN numbers, Joy, are 1234. So if you're using 1234, that's not a good one to use. Use something much more random. 1111 is not good. 9999 is not good. Go to something that, you know, your first four digits of your phone number or something like that, so that it's a little more random and a little harder for the crooks to guess.
Yeah. What about birth dates?
I just use four asterisks. I don't know why I do that, but.
Well, if you have a financial fear that you'd like to run by Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is another edition of On Your Money, and let's take a call now from Michael in Menasha. I'm sorry, it's Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. The question I had for Kevin is, my family and I are looking at switching from a full service broker, and we're looking at some of these online brokerage firms. And was wondering if you had any advice around, when you're looking at these online brokers and some of the gotchas, or even just kind of compare and contrast, you know, potentially what you lose versus what you gain for going with an online brokerage firm.
What you lose is fairly obvious, and to some people it may be extremely important, and other people it may be not important at all. It may even be a benefit of switching, in that you have this individual with a traditional brokerage firm whom you can contact. You know the person. Hopefully they know you. They contact you with things, keep you updated on your situation, make suggestions or changes, and then you can ask them just about any question. But generally, you have to pay that person. And sometimes when you have to pay that person, it doesn't seem like you're getting in return what you're paying for. So if that's the case and you want to do it yourself, it's never been a better time to do that. Places like Vanguard, Schwab, Fidelity all handle, you know, literally trillions of dollars of people's money who do that for themselves. And for people who have more than, you know, six figures or more to invest, sometimes you can get either a specific individual, like a dedicated rep, if you will, or you can get someone who has a private wealth manager or something for up at the upper levels, where it's just one person. Now you won't have face-to-face meetings with them. They are not going to be usually perfectly unbiased. They're not fiduciaries in the sense that they're going to tell you to go across the street to a bank to get a CD that might be better for you than the one they offer. But they still can give you quite a bit of service and information. And generally, they don't charge huge commissions or earn huge commissions on your transactions and trades. So hopefully, the removal of that bias means that you're going to pay a little less and maybe get some more unbiased advice for that. But you're still really going to have to plan on being on your own. So you have to be comfortable doing it, which again, it's never been a better time to do that. But for some people, that's a very alarming thought of being in charge of their own finances and kind of being responsible for it as well.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike, for the call. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and this is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
When I retire, don't want to have to worry. When I retire, I don't want to have to fret.
Well, not only did we reach our goal for our most recent pledge drive, we exceeded it. So thank you so very much. And Kevin promised some useful figures and a formula for calculating retirement if we reached our goal. So, Kevin, why don't we reveal those figures now?
Yeah, there's a correlation between how many times we have an actual membership drive on this show and then offer actual useful information. And so here's the payoff for that. And we're going to talk about, first of all, thank you very much to all of you who did pledge. That's an astounding number, and I am humbled by it, and I thank you for your support. We really appreciate you listening, and when you do have the time and money to send it along to Wisconsin Public Radio, Joy and I appreciate it very much. First of all, let's talk about how to figure out how much you need to retire and how you are doing so far. Again, as a recap, we predicate your success on your monthly spending right now. And if you're in your 30s, you should have about 10 times your monthly spending saved up for retirement. 25 times in your 40s, 50 times in your 50s, 100 times by the time you get to 60, and if you're going to retire in your mid-60s, you should have 200 times your net spending in your 60s. And now net means minus any Social Security or pension checks that you hope to receive.
All right, so what can one spend once we reach retirement?
Okay, so add up your nest egg, your liquid assets. This would be 401ks and IRAs and savings accounts, CDs, just about anything that is a dollar sign represented by a piece of paper, and then divide it by your life expectancy. And the result is what you can spend every single month and every single year.
Can you give us an example?
I sure can. Now, let's say you are part of a 65-year-old couple, and you figure, well, we've got about 25 more years of life ahead of us, and we're going to live till 90, and we have about $500,000 that we've been fortunate enough to put aside. So divide that $500,000 amount by 25, and that'll give you $20,000 per year that you can spend, and that works out to about $1,666 per month. And keep in mind, that may not sound like a whole lot, but you can tack that on to any Social Security or pension checks that you're receiving. And for this couple, if they're receiving, let's say, $3,000 in Social Security between the two of them, they can add another $1,600 on top of that and spend about $4,600 per month.
All right, but both the life expectancy and dollar amounts will change, won't they, Kevin? So what do we do?
Well, that's the beauty of this. You can keep redoing the calculation based not only on what your current assets are, but what your adjusted life expectancy is. And again, take your net monthly expenses and keep going up for after Social Security and pensions. So if you need to spend $4,000 per month and you're getting $2,000 from Social Security, you only need $200,000 in savings and investments. The great thing about that is that even if you can see your dollars dwindle and it starts to worry you a little bit, you can say, well, now for better or for worse, I probably have less retirement ahead of me than I had 5 or 10 years ago. Therefore, I need less money to support myself over that time period.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. He joins us each week at this time for information and advice on your money. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's take another call from Bob in Onalaska now. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Yes, what's your
question? I was wondering, I got my retirement thing from the company, and last time from January to September, I made 0.03%. I didn't lose anything, but that's what I got. And I'm wondering whether I should do something different. It was in the fixed, the very safest.
Yeah, that's disappointing from a return standpoint, but it's very heartening. It means that your money was invested very conservatively. And that's the nature of the times right now, that if you do want to be safer rather than sorrier, you need to accept an extremely low rate of return. But a lot of people out there feel like you do, Bob, and are more hesitant to take risks when asset prices are at or near all-time highs, interest rates are near all-time lows. And more importantly for you, Bob, when did you retire?
Well, I'm going to this year.
Okay, that's another good point. For people in your situation, I would much rather have you err on the side of caution anyway, because even if you look at your dollar amount, you look at your Social Security and say, hey, this is a pretty good deal, I think I can do this, it can be very traumatic if you retire, you give up your paycheck, and then all of a sudden you lose 20 or 30% of your retirement savings just because, you know, the natural ebb and flow of asset prices and the stock market and the global economy and whatever. So, again, I'd much rather have you err on the side of caution. And if you want to take control over the money, and you can earn a little higher yield on it if you want, is you can move it to an IRA at, you know, a brokerage firm, an insurance company, investment firm, whatever. But you can also go directly to a credit union or a bank, and they will offer you CDs that pay, you know, a little better than that rate, maybe 1 or 2% if you can find a good one out there. And if what you do is you open up an IRA at the new institution, and then the new institution is in charge of transferring the money over from the plan to the new institution. They should take care of all of the paperwork, and if they make it a custodian-to-custodian transfer, which they should, you won't owe any taxes on the money until you actually pull it out and spend it.
All right. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you.
That's Kevin. He's helpful. Thank you, Bob. Let's go to Pat in Rice Lake now. Hello, Pat.
Hello. thanks for taking my call. I have a problem. I'm selling my home here, and I'm going to be moving to another city. And I'm 79 years old. I would like to know if I would be smart in buying a condo, renting, or going into a co-op. I need to do something with the money that I'll be making off my house. And I've got enough money for retirement. I've got enough money in stocks. So I don't know what to do with this.
Sure. Do you, Pat, do you have some familiarity with the location to where you are moving?
Yes, the Twin Cities.
Oh, the Twin Cities. You're talking about Nina Menasha, of course. No, you're talking about Minneapolis, St. Paul, right? Yeah, great area. I would say this, especially if you are moving to a larger urban area, unless you are strongly determined to be a homeowner, I would much rather have you rent at least for the first year, and for a couple of reasons. One of which is you don't have to make any commitment to a house, and you don't have to make a, you know, transfer all of your savings over to that. And the second thing is it gives you a chance to get adjusted to the new area. And without having to say, oh, gosh, this turned out to be a terrible neighborhood, and I didn't scout it correctly, now I have to try to sell my house in my terrible neighborhood. And a lot of people in your situation, Pat, just want to rent. And owning a condo can be nice. It's not a great way to make money, though. And as we mentioned before, you get almost all the negatives of having an apartment and almost all the negatives of owning a home. With a condo. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but you definitely should not do it for price appreciation or for expenses, because many times with a condo, once you add up the condo fee, the property taxes, et cetera, it can be even more expensive than owning a standalone home. And you know, you still have all your neighbors next to you and people you might not appreciate. So I'd like to have you rent at least for a year, get a feel for the place, get a feel for renting, rent something nice, get some, you know, don't shrink on this. Get something that feels very comfortable to you that you might see yourself in for several years, but that also just feels good to you. And then if after a year you say, yeah, this isn't for me, housing prices might be cheaper in a year and you can probably get a better deal since you'll be a cash buyer.
Okay, but no, how about a co-op? And as far as the Twin Cities, I'm originally from there, from Minneapolis South.
Sure.
And so I've lived most of my life there until we retired up here, and now I've lost a husband, and I would like to go back.
Okay.
Or at least I have one child in that state, which I have nobody in this state at all.
Got it. I have good news for you. Do you remember Matt's Bar and Grill on 35th and Cedar?
It's still there.
It's still there. They're still serving Juicy Lucy's. I just had one a little while ago. Yeah, the co-op one I'm not as familiar with. Are you talking about like a retirement housing co-op?
Yeah, it would be 55 and older, but they call them co-ops. And
okay.
You put so much money down, and you get it back when you either leave or you go out in a box.
Yeah, you leave either vertically or horizontally, right? Okay. Yeah, I don't mind those. Again, I'd rather have you. You sound like you're in great shape, mm-hmm. and therefore I'd rather have you live independently as long as you can. Financially, those can be kind of tricky. They're right for some people, but they also put you on a track that is kind of. That's kind of limiting for your options for it. So again, I'd like to maybe rent for a year and then keep exploring the co-ops in the area and get a longer chance to check them out. They'll always be there. And if they're not there, you'll be very glad you didn't give them a bunch of money in the first place.
Good luck to you, Pat. And I hope you'll still try to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio after you make that move. We want you listening along. Let's take another call from Bobby in Ettrick. Hello, Bobby.
Hi there. I see we're running out of time. I'll try to make this quick. My father just passed away a couple weeks ago. My mother's never worked. She's 63. When everything is all said and done, her lump sum from the insurance will be about $65,000. They have a house that my grandmother lives there with her. They made the bottom part into an apartment. I have a two-part question. Her payments on the house are $1,100 a month. We're looking to find out what would be the best way to invest some of that insurance money, and would it be worth it to turn the house with about $7,000 worth of corrections? We can make a two apartments rental out of it for extra income for her, and I'm wondering if that would be a good way to go or just try to sell the house.
Right. I'm sorry for your loss, Bobby, and then I really appreciate you taking the initiative here to try to help your mother out, because this is something that the emotional loss cannot be fixed or solved. The financial loss can be, and it's oftentimes those get intertwined, and it's very difficult to address this quickly. So good for you. This is probably one of the best things you could do for your mother right now. I would say that I would try it first by putting some of that money into fixing it up, splitting it off, getting the rental income for it, because you can always sell it down the road if you decide you can't afford it or your mom doesn't want to live there anymore. And even when you do sell it, you do have to find a new place for it. So unless, you know, she's going to really scale back from one place to another, it's going to be difficult for her to get out of the mortgage issue. And so I would really like to see you try to have her stay in there. She's gone through enough transition already, trying to give her a bunch more to deal with at this in this narrow time frame is probably too much. So I'm all for spending a little bit of money, fixing it up the way that she likes it, and if she can develop it enough so she can rent out the other side and get some income down the road, that seems like a great investment for the time being.
Bobby, good luck, and again, sorry for your loss. Kim in Fond du Lac emails, we have a couple of credit cards, but use one main credit card for the bulk of our monthly expenses. Occasionally, we are not able to pay the full balance on that main card, so we transfer the balance to one of the other cards that offers free interest up to 12 months. They usually charge a 1% or 2% fee of the balance being transferred, but it seems to be a better deal than paying monthly interest charges on our main card. What do you think of this, Kevin?
I think it's a great idea, except it's also like the game of musical chairs in that you can be wandering around while the music's playing, looking at every single chair. Sometimes, though, the music stops and you have no place to sit. And the same thing with the credit cards. Between confusion, loss of tracking the details on a day-to-day basis, and very arcane terms which are designed really to catch people who are trying to do this, you could find yourself paying a lot more in interest if and when the music stops, meaning that you give up the 0% interest thing ends and you don't have a good place to go because you've been switching so much. It can ding your credit score a little bit if you do this a lot as well, but it doesn't sound like that's your biggest issue. So for the time being, as long as you're willing to stay on very close watch of the situation, plus read the terms very carefully and save the terms, I'm okay with this strategy.
Good luck to you, Kim. And I think we have time now for the website of the week, Kevin.
Well, we mentioned Amazon and shopping there. There's an interestingly named website called CamelCamelCamel.com. Again, what is this the proof of? That all of the good domain names are already taken. But CamelCamelCamel.com allows you to not only track the price movements of items on Amazon.com and several other online sites like Best Buy, it offers some prediction as to if that price is probably likely to go up in the future or down in the future, so you can decide if you should buy it now or maybe wait. CamelCamelCamel.com. And again, that link will be up at OnYourMoney.com later on today. And we'll also put a link up on there as well. If you do shop at Amazon.com and you go through the WPR.org website, any purchases you make by going through the WPR website first will provide a small payment back to Wisconsin Public Radio. So it's a good way to shop at Amazon, but still support Wisconsin Public Radio without spending any more money than you otherwise would.
Well, Kevin, thank you for another great show and for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio, too. Four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. Kevin joins us just about every week at this time with information and advice on your money. We'll talk to him again next week. And I hope we will talk to you again next week as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.